From a top secret network of highly secure locations across South Texas, this is the Spurs Insider Podcast, brought to you by Taco Palenque, where you can get the best fajitas in Texas. Stop by any of the Taco Palenque locations and try the limited time chicken al pastor, quesadilla, and pirata. Don't forget to pair it with an ice cold frozen margarita. Try the lime, mango chamoy, and for a limited time, guapa. Taco Palenque keeps San Antonio cool and well-fed and is the best pre- or post-game meal for watching the Spurs.
And the 281 location near Evans Road is outstanding.
There you go. That's an endorsement from Tom Orsborn, who is, as always, is joining us on our panel this week. He's a Spurs beat writer for the Express News. We also have Jeff McDonald from the Express News. I am Mike Finger. The three of us are back in our highly secure locations after taking New England by storm, watching this year's Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame enshrinement class, which included Pau Gasol. It included Dirk Nowitzki. It included Dwayne Wade. It included Jeff McDonald's personal favorite. I think that was Gene Best, the spry all-time leader in junior college victories. And it also had a couple of fellas known around these parts, Becky Hammon, and a couple of fellas known as Tony Parker and Greg Popovich. We will start with Tom Orsborn. This was his first trip to Springfield, Massachusetts, his first trip to Symphony Hall. What are your impressions after watching this star-studded class getting in trial?
My maiden voyage was memorable, very memorable. Enjoyed the whole thing. The ceremony, the program was really, really smooth, really good. Speakers were good. I particularly liked Tony Parker. I thought he was really genuine, just relaxed, and quite humorous. But Pop was great. You know, he pulled the curtain back, showed us his family, intensely private individual, but he was very generous in including his family, showing them to the basketball world. Becky's moment where she thanked Pop was very memorable for what, you know, the impact that he's had on her life. So yeah, it was a really great experience. Loved being up there.
Jeff, what sticks out to you?
That casino in Uncasville has a lot of good dining options. We didn't play the slots or anything, but that's where they have the press conference the day before. And so you get to see both Connecticut and Massachusetts on that trip. You can knock out a lot of New England. So that's what I remember.
Anything surprised you from any of the speeches?
No, I wouldn't say surprised. I wouldn't say surprised, but I did want to echo what Tom said. I thought one of the things that just stuck out to me maybe was how much Pop's family played into his speech, which I don't think is a surprise. I mean, we know that he loves his family and they were a big part of his journey. He's just been very, as Tom said, very, very private about that part of his life. And I don't know, it humanized him a little bit. Like when he made his grandchildren stand up and wave, you know, he seems like less like the winningest basketball coach in NBA history and tormentor of sports journalists everywhere, and more like just like a doting grandpa. So that was just kind of fun for me to watch, fun for me to see. The rest of it, it was pretty par for the course, and it was just a nice night. We kind of talked about this last week, but it was a good night for the whole Spurs family to get together and sort of celebrate that group one last time. Because yes, it was Tony going in. Yes, it was Pop going in. But each time any of those guys went in, do you think of Tim, Tony, and Manu all together? And to see them all up on the stage together, along with David Robinson for Pop's induction, particularly, I mean, I don't know how a Spurs fan can watch that and not just reflect on how just dadgum lucky they've gotten from in this city for the past three decades or more.
It's sort of the last time hearing those stories in a way. And some of them have become old hat, and it's like we've been through this cycle. We've talked about this before of a player retires, Tim Duncan retires, and you kind of reflect on that. And then Tim Duncan's jersey is retired and you have that night. And then he's elected to the Hall of Fame. And then he gets his Hall of Fame speech. We've had that cycle of reflection for three of these guys, plus, you know, the Pop Hall of Fame thing, to where a lot of these speeches are speeches that Spurs fans have heard in various forms multiple times in recent years. And this is this might kind of be the last time, unless, you know, you have a Greg Popovich Blazer retirement at the AT&T Center. That might be another chance for Tim, Tony, and Manu to all come together. But there was definitely a sense of this is kind of tying the bow on that era.
I don't think we're going to have an opportunity to sort of share those stories again. I will say I'm not going to be shocked if this isn't the last time we go to Springfield to witness the induction of a man from that championship era, because I think R.C. Buford has a decent chance.
Absolutely. He shouldn't be in it.
I don't think it'll be the same kind of celebration. I think players, fans relate more to players and then possibly coaches more than they do front office executives. But R.C. was as much a part of that run as anybody. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's in a class in some year to come. And I would almost be surprised if he's not at some point. I don't know if it's imminent, but I think he's a guy that they're definitely going to look towards putting in the Hall at some point.
Well, Pop made it a point of pointing out that R.C. Buford was the man who deserved to be standing next to him on that stage. And just one of many, many moments when there were tears in the eyes of both Greg Popovich and the people listening to him. The Pop Becky moment that Tom mentioned earlier was one of those where these two people are basically bawling, looking at each other. RC, on down the line. The other potential spur going into the Hall of Fame within the next decade or so, and Nick Talbot is listening in, our sports editor. He asked not to be introduced, but I'm wondering, Jeff, are you going to petition Nick Talbot in 10 years to go to the Kawhi Leonard Hall of Fame and try?
I'll answer that question, but I think we might be skipping one, because someone pointed out this out to me, or just floated this out to me, is maybe this is the next Spurs related player to be inducted. What do we think about LaMarcus? Does he get out at any point?
I'm not so. It's such a weird Hall of Fame. It is the most open of the major sports Hall of Fames. Like, if you put LaMarcus Aldridge's career by like baseball Cooperstown Hall of Fame standards, you don't think he gets in. But look back at last year, the class alongside Manu was the second biggest name, Tim Hardaway.
Yeah, isn't he at least as worthy as Tim Hardaway? I'm not even taking any away.
It's interesting. It's really interesting.
Those are both great points, and you're both right. I think he does get in eventually, but you know, and is he really worthy of it? You know, by baseball standards, I don't know, but I think he will get in.
I think your only knock on LaMarcus is he never won much of anything. You know, it wasn't even just he didn't win a title; they were never really title contenders, either in Portland or in the latter part of his year in San Antonio. Maybe you look at it as, you know, if they do pull it out the year Kawhi gets hurt in Golden State, you know, LaMarcus is on that team and a huge part of that team. If they do get to the finals that year, if they do win the finals that year, does that change the entire conversation around LaMarcus Aldridge? I think maybe it might.
From my secure location, I just pulled up a web page on Basketball Reference that keeps track. And I realize these decisions on enshrinement are not totally like stats based. There's a lot of factors that go into it. Like Jerry Colangelo sort of runs the thing. And if he wants you in, you're in. But it is an interesting kind of algorithm that Basketball Reference uses to determine Hall of Fame probability. And for instance, like David Robinson was 1,000 based on just his stats. Right now, Stephen Curry, Chris Paul, look at active players, LeBron James, Kevin Durant are all listed as 1,000. James Harden is 99.99. Russell Westbrook is 99.94. Anybody want to guess what the number next to LaMarcus Aldridge is?
No, but why don't you tell us?
Well, I just lost it. Talk while I look. Who else?
What's this called?
Talk amongst yourselves.
Steve Kerr will go in one day as a coach, for whatever that's worth. He does have the Spur tie. He is part of the family.
Yeah. And, okay, here we go. LaMarcus Aldridge, 50%, basically, 50.89%. And he did a coin toss to get in. Oh. DeMar DeRozan, 42%. I want to see. Let's see if I can do a little search here and see what the guy who just went in. Tony Parker was 93.8%. So that kind of I can't explain to the viewers / listeners exactly what all goes into this, but here's another thing. Manu Ginobili was listed at 20%, but that's based on NBA numbers only. It doesn't necessarily measure FIBA, which is a huge part of Manu's case.
But Manu was elected by the North American Committee. It wasn't for FIBA.
Correct. The North American Committee considered, it's hard for them to throw out part of the resume that they're not supposed to consider. It's like, the judge instructs the jury, ignore that outburst that just came from the gallery. Well, the jury is still going to pay attention to whether they're supposed to or not.
Also, I think in some sense, titles matter. And him being a central part of one of, if not the preeminent team of his, NBA team of his, we're talking about Manu here, of his era, I think that plays huge in that.
Well,
that would be an argument against LaMarcus.
Well, I'm looking at the explanation of the Hall of Fame probability on Basketball Reference, and it does include that stuff. It does count championships. So even with the championships factored in, and this may be a flaw in the model, it only had Manu at 20% and still has LaMarcus at 50. But I guess this does prove your point that it's definitely a possibility that LaMarcus gets in. It's a possibility that DeMar DeRozan gets in. So there could be some others. But were you going to answer the Kawhi thing? If you still have your job, and that's the longest shot here, if you still have your job,
what does basketball Kawhi Leonard go through about the probability I still have my job in 10 years?
That's listed at -1%.
Okay.
But if you did, would you go to the Kawhi?
Do you really think
we should cover that?
Do you want me to answer this honestly?
Yes, like should the San Antonio Express?
Well, it's going to make me feel such a jaded beehole.
That, what else is new?
It has nothing to do with Kawhi. It's not an enjoyable trip. It's not a fun thing to cover. You don't get to really talk to anybody more than maybe a question at the Friday press conference if you happen to have enough histrionics to get called upon. You're watching the ceremony from basically a back room. Yeah, you can wander into the crowd if you want, but the workroom isn't anywhere. You're watching on a TV monitor. And not for nothing, it's a hard place to get to. It might be recency bias. Like getting back from that for me was a nightmare. I ended up getting stranded in I was gonna say Washington DC, but I didn't even get that satisfaction. I got stranded in Virginia at Dulles for an extra night. It's just the whole thing is just not my favorite thing to cover. So it has nothing to do with Kawhi. I know Spurs fans would like me to say, heck no, I don't want to go see that guy. But it has nothing to do with that. It's just not a fun event to cover. And I didn't want to have to give that answer and sound like a jaded beehole, but I guess I am. So that's why it comes out that way.
Yeah. Tom, you were trying to interject there?
Well, I had a smooth flight from
thanks.
Does it do me any good?
Hartford to Chicago O'Hare, sat next to a delightful longtime teacher / administrator with the Chicago School District. We had a delightful conversation.
Are you one of those annoying people that talks to the person next to them on flight?
She looked at my book and she asked me about the book I was reading. I looked at hers, did likewise, and we're off to the
moon. Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
This is why God invented headphones.
Well, I was on one of those small jets, you know, it was two seats side by side.
I would rather pretend I was deaf than have to talk to the person next to me on a flight. And that's even if it was Mike Finger. Maybe especially if it was Mike Finger.
Now, I understand that, yeah.
Mike Finger does not talk on flight. That is 100%.
That's why we travel well together.
It is. Yeah, we never speak. Jeff does have a point. Like, that's not the smoothest. It's not run by the NBA Final Four, or not Final Four, the Hall of Fame. It's kind of just a TV event, and it's not the smoothest thing to cover. The listeners don't care about this. The readers don't care about what's smooth for us.
But it was just answering honestly.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
The question that was posed to me. Do you want me to answer it maturely? Do I have to answer that maturely?
That was one of the fun highlights from Friday at the casino in Uncasville, Connecticut, home of the Mohegan Sun, where we've been a couple of years in a row. Report there for our press conference that's carried live on NBA TV. That's basically just providing content for NBA TV, and the reporters are sort of inconsequential to the whole affair. You can be like, yes,
I would say.
Like, ESPN is raising their hand and can't get a question because no one knows who the reporters are. So you get six questions from some podcast that has, well, now I'm bashing my own podcast. You know, at some podcast.
Maybe we should have introduced ourselves as From Spurs Insider Podcast.
That's right.
Some brand of news. No one's ever heard of Express News, but the Spurs Insider Podcast has some cachet out there.
The Express News did get a question of Greg Popovich at this thing, and it was just the most perfect thing. Greg Popovich mocks the whole thing. What does he say? It was about Tony, and
what Tony had learned from him, and he had learned vice versa what Pop had learned from Tony.
And Pop did this thing where we've talked about this in recent years. He answers with the cadence of a joke. When I think he's sort of telling the truth, he said, "I didn't learn a dang thing. Tony taught me nothing." He said, "What did he say?" He did whatever I told him to, and now he's in the Hall of Fame. Just made a mockery of the whole question. Sort of with a tinge of some truth in there. And then he turns to Lisa Salters, who's moderating the whole thing, and he's "What was it? Now do I have to answer this maturely?" Which was just a perfect way for him to go into the Hall of Fame.
It made me want to take Liesl Salters on the road with us like all year long. Because on the road, he doesn't have anyone to make him answer maturely. That would have been the end of quote.
But then he ends up ripping Liesl Salters, who interrupted one of his jokes, or ruined his jokes about Becky.
That was a funny moment. Yeah, it hurt.
When he asked where the heck Becky Hammon was. She didn't even show up. Lisa Salters politely says, "She has a game tonight, coach." And Pop says, "You just ruined the whole joke."
I know that.
It's not the best event in the world to cover, but.
All right. This is also a true part of your answer. And I will be a little softy and say, you know, as someone that was around for the bulk of that run, you know, I started covering the Spurs in 07, 08 when it felt like all those guys were ancient, but I did get more of Tim's career and definitely Manu and Tony's career than anybody. To have been along for that ride and that, even that part of the ride, it was nice to be in the building when they are inducted in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. That's a cool thing. And like,
it was almost like putting a bow on it for me as well, like for my own interactions with these men over the years. So I will admit to that.
And I'll say, like, both Manu and Tony seem like they appreciated having you there. We talked to Manu the day before this last induction. We were up there for his thing last year. And you were the guy in the locker room with them for the bulk of their career, and they both give you some nice little some props there when they see you, those things. I think that's cool that you get to have that.
What about when one Victor Wembanyama goes in 2048?
I'm hoping we're all dead by then.
I think there's a good chance that will be true. The another thing we can talk about this so-called end of an era is the idea that the Spurs don't necessarily see it that way. The host of this podcast had a column in a newspaper the other day. I don't know if people still read the newspaper about how, on one hand, yeah, like I said earlier, these stories aren't going to get told again in Springfield. It's the last time this group's going to go in together. It's the last time it's going to feel this way. It's the last sort of huge Spurs family reunion in Springfield, where they've had a bunch of those in recent years. And it's really cool to see how many different people from around the league come back that are coaches, that are front office people, that are players on other teams, that all kind of intersected with this group. But talking to some people on the team that are going to still be around, it's like they don't necessarily see it as an end of an era, partly because Greg Popovich is still around in the next one. And part of it is all those guys, Manu and Tim especially, Tony's sort of around, but Manu and Tim are around this next group pretty much on a day-to-day basis. Manu's in the front office. Tim basically lives at the practice facility. They see this as kind of a continuation of what was built 25 years ago. And I think that's kind of a cool way to look at it too, that it might be putting a bow on the big three thing, but the big three are that influence is still around. Pop, the coach of the whole thing, is still going to be around. And, I think that a lot of pro franchises talk about building family and stuff like that. A lot of times it's cliche, but there definitely it is this overarching set of relationships that exist with this franchise, partly because one coach has been coaching for more than a quarter century. But I think when you talk to Victor Wembanyama or Jeremy Sochan or Keldon Johnson in 10 years, I think they're going to feel connected to the Tim, Tony, Manu teams in a way, don't you?
I think it's still part of the same thing as long as Pop is still around.
Yeah.
When he finally steps away for good and is not part of the thing for good, I wonder what that's going to look like and feel like. I wonder if, is Tim Duncan going to still be hanging around? Is Manu still going to be hanging around? If they're linked to that, I don't know the answer to that. Like, it's just something to see. And, we've done, but Pop signed, a 5-year deal? And people asked us, various other reporters asked us when they bumped into us in Springfield, is he going to coach the whole five? And we said, probably not. But there's a path there for him to finish in the front office. And maybe when he's still in the front office or in some kind of advisory role, maybe that connection is still there. But when he's gone for good, I'm wondering what those links are going to look like.
Well, I would say that what you just said is very fair. I would also add, I'm not one on the to make grand predictions, but I feel pretty confident that the coach who takes over for Pop will be someone who either played or coached for Pop.
Sure.
So maybe there will be some kind of carryover there. It won't be, it'll be different. Like you said, it won't be Pop overseeing the whole thing, but I feel like there'll be a connection there. And I don't think R.C. Buford is going to leave as CEO anytime soon. And that's a much different sort of relationship, the CEO type of guy overseeing the whole organization. But there's definite continuity there. And so on the one hand, while Spurs fans took this last weekend as a chance to look back, there's definitely a lot of reasons to look forward, not just Victor Wembanyama, but just the whole thing moving forward. A lot of reasons for hope and encouragement.
I mean, one reason to look forward is this in-season tournament they're going to have this year.
You could host for me next time.
It's going to be amazing.
We needed to get to that. We, in our little pre podcast.
We didn't need to get to that. Come on.
We talked about what we could wheel out our 30 minutes with, and you're getting us there before we end up. The NBA releases its schedule this week. By the time you listen to this, you might have access to the complete schedule. What we have access to right now is the in-game, in-season tournament.
What the NBA announced schedule. What the NBA announced the other day are four regular season games that are already on the schedule somewhere. So there's like a sneak peek.
It's a sneak peek.
We already even knew the group they were in. Like, I give the NBA credit for like milking these announcements into like television specials on ESPN and stuff. But yeah, we had a television special on ESPN to announce four random regular season games a couple days early.
Right.
But now we know that we can make our plans for November 10th against Minnesota.
What's noteworthy about that is no team in the NBA has those four random.
Go for it.
No team in the NBA has more of those random midseason tournament games on national TV than your local Cagers.
We already know before the schedule is even. I mean, we could have predicted, but we know for a fact, like the first batch, the four games, they have three on national television. They already in that batch of four games, they already have more games on national television than they had all of last season.
Maybe the last two seasons combined.
And I mean, and that's even if you include the play-in game from two seasons ago.
Yeah.
They had one last year and one the year before, and three in the in-season tournament. And I think that portends a lot of national television games on the full schedule when it is released later this week. So I think
no
Spurs fans.
Anymore, right?
Yeah, no Christmas game as far as the reporting goes, which is a little surprising to me. Yeah, it's a little surprising to me until you look at the list and you're like, who would you knock off? Well, there's no one there that you just. Is an obvious candidate to be kicked out of the Christmas game schedule. So you kind of realize there's only a third of the league gets a Christmas Day game. So, and one of them is always going to go to LA, the Lakers. One of them is always going to go to the Knicks. One of them is always going to go to the defending champion. And then the various, you know, your Warriors are already going to get one. Bucks because of Giannis. So I wasn't completely shocked once I sat down and thought about it. But anyway, proceed with the in-season tournament talk.
Well, we don't need to talk about the NCs. All the NCs tournament.
Let's talk about who thinks going to win it.
All this is to be completely serious. It's a way to motivate players to play in that part of the schedule where it's really easy to take. Not only players, because I shouldn't put this on the players. It's not the players who try to sit out. It's a way to motivate teams and players to care about those early season.
Do you think the Lakers care about the NBA Cup? The Warriors are going to care about the NBA Cup.
The winner gets $1 million, or some kind of with the isn't that right? The 500,000 each player gets a monetary bonus. Like,
yeah,
that's really what it is. It's a way to get them on the court early in the year on games that most people.
Yeah, okay. Here's something we can chew over. ESPN's Bobby Marks suggested he would like to see the winner of the NBA Cup get an automatic bid to the playoffs at the end of the year. What do we think about that? And B, who do you think it would motivate the most?
Well, it would motivate the bad teams the most.
I agree with that, but I also think you might see more motivation out of like the LeBrons of the world, LeBron teams of the world. It's just like, hey, we got our spot.
I'm not so sure about that.
The older teams.
Yeah.
When the whole season tournament ends up with a bunch of injuries and still makes the playoffs, I don't know.
Right. That's not great. Well, here's the thing about the whole in-season tournament thing. It's modeled on soccer. And I am by no means I don't think anybody on this podcast is a soccer expert.
The rest of the world call that's what they call a football.
Correct. But to be
just spilling you in.
To be serious here, the reason they're in season tournaments in soccer, football as the rest of the world calls it, is because those in season tournaments include teams from different leagues. like you have the English premier. The listeners now are screaming because they realize how little I know about soccer. But you have like the English Premier League teams playing against the teams from other leagues in Europe in games that wouldn't happen in their own league. Whereas the NBA is doing it as part of their regular schedule. It's a completely different beast, and it just seems silly to attempt. But they're doing it, like I said, to motivate teams and players to care about these early season games, maybe trick a few fans into thinking it's like hugely meaningful to care about some of these games they wouldn't care about otherwise. That's fine. But tying a postseason berth to how that team plays in what, 6-7 games, that doesn't, at first I thought, what's the harm? Now the more I think about it, that seems like a terrible idea. And I'm against it.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I also think it's hard to see a team winning that NBA Cup that wasn't going to make the playoffs anyway.
Like, you know, how often do you see a team get really hot in November and December and then flame out? Like, it happens a lot. The Pelicans were one of the hottest teams in the league.
Right.
Each of the last couple of years.
Hey, remember last year? Remember last year when the Spurs won 2 of 3?
Yeah.
They were hot.
But anyway, to tie this, tie a bow on this. The point is, you're
kind of a little close today. I'm just telling you.
It's part of a theme. That's why I brought it back. It's a motif of this podcast.
Strawberry shortcake or something.
It's bow tying, and the local Cagers are going to be on national TV as much as most anybody in the league this year. People are caring about San Antonio basketball again across the NBA because of what's happening in the future, because of their young kid. This is coming right after a week in which the whole basketball world paid homage to what the Spurs were over the past 20 years. It's all coming together. The past was fun to think about. The future is fun to think about, especially if you have a pirata from our sponsor, Taco Palenque. For people who don't know, like, I've had many of these over the years. I can honestly say it's not just because they're a sponsor of the podcast. One of my go-to orders is the pirata, which is a bean and cheese taco with fajitas in it. Like, what's better than that? It's great.
So could you say that's been both part of your past and your future?
It's been part of my past and my future. Both, as anyone who knows me will attest, like, I just see the positive in everything. My past, my future. That's the same for the Spurs.
What about the present?
Oh, you never.
Present's never great. But the past is great. The future is great. And that goes for our listeners of the podcast. Until we see you next time, probably in September, take care of each other and keep it real.